Reed College at that time offered perhaps the best calligraphy instruction in the country. Throughout the campus, every poster, every label on every drawer was beautifully hand-calligraphed. Because I had dropped out and didn't have to take the normal classes, I decided to take a calligraphy class to learn how to do this. I learned about serif and sans-serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between different letter combinations, about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in a way that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. None of this had even a hope of any practical application in my life. But 10 years later, when we were designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to me. And we designed it all into the Mac. It was the first computer with beautiful typography. If I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would never have had multiple typefaces or proportionately spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. This approach has never let me down, and it has made all the difference in my life. Steve Jobs' story underscores that the inspiration for technological breakthroughs is not always rooted in technological knowledge alone. Math and science are necessary, critically necessary, but they are not sufficient. I think one reason America has always been a leader in innovation of new products and services, from IBMs to iPods, is that our society has always valued both technology and liberal arts. In our justifiable desire to leave no child behind, we need to make sure that we don't leave art and music and theater and literature classes behind as well. It would undermine a critical source of our economic strength and our ability to generate good new middle jobs and the workers to fill them. As Mark Tucker notes, those countries that produce the most important new products and services can capture a premium in world markets that will enable them to pay high wages to their citizens. But that kind of leadership does not depend on technology alone. It depends on a deep vein of creativity that is constantly renewing itself, and on a myriad of people who can imagine how people can use things that have never been available before, create ingenious marketing and sales campaigns, write books, build furniture, make movies, imagine new kinds of software that will capture people's imagination and become indispensable to millions. This is a world in which a very high level of preparation in reading, writing, speaking, mathematics, science, literature, history, and the arts will be an indispensable foundation for everything that comes after for most members of the workforce. It is a world in which comfort with ideas and abstractions is the passport to a good job, in which creativity and innovation are the key to a good life, in which high levels of education, a very different kind of education than most of us have had, are going to be the only security there is. A world in which routine work is largely done by machines is a world in which mathematical reasoning will be no less important than math facts, in which line workers who cannot contribute to the design of the products they are fabricating may be as obsolete as the last model of that product, in which software engineers who are also musicians and artists will have an edge over those who are not, as the entertainment industry evolves. A world in which it will pay architects to know something about nanotechnology, and small businessmen who build custom yachts and fishing boats will be able to survive only if they quickly learn a lot about the scientific foundation of carbon fiber composites. As I have said, India and China have provided large numbers of their young people with solid foundations in math and science, and it has been extremely important in their rise out of poverty. But it is no accident that when you talk to Indian and Chinese business people and even educators, some now openly express their concerns that if math and science are not leavened by art, literature, music, and the humanities, their countries will be at a competitive disadvantage as they try to get to the next level of global competition. Jerry Rao, the co-founder of Emphasis, the big Indian outsourcing firm, put it to me this way. We have no one going into the liberal arts and everyone going into engineering and MBAs. We're becoming a nation of aspiring programmers and salespeople. 50 years ago, the Sanskrit scholar was respected in India, Mr. Rao noted. But today, it is all about becoming an engineer, a programmer, an MBA, or a doctor. More people will get PhDs in the study of Sanskrit in America this year than in India, Mr. Rao asserted. And Sanskrit is the root of our culture. If we don't have enough people with the humanities, we will lose the next generation of V.S. Naipauls and Amartya Sens, he added, referring to the Indian Trinidadian author and the Indian economist, both Nobel laureates. That is sad and dangerous. Right brain. Finally, if creativity depends on connecting disparate dots, then we need to be educating our young people not only in more dots, a la the liberal arts, but also in the ability to think horizontally, to mesh together different perspectives and disciplines to produce a third thing. That skill is something that happens on the right side of our brains, and educators need to think about how we nurture that. Daniel Pink, author of A Whole New Mind, Moving from the Information Age to the Conceptual Age, explains.